and welcome to Women for Elections in Conversation podcast series. In this episode, Margaret Ward is in conversation with Maria Walsh, MEP. Maria discusses the role Women for Election training had in her decision to choose to run for election. Maria and Margaret discuss the importance of community activism and the part it played in Maria's political journey.
So hello everybody, thank you very much for joining us. My name is Alison Kauser and I am Chair of Women for Election. And just to give you a little bit of background on Women for Election, our mission is to inspire, equip, support and advocate for women to succeed in Irish politics. We run training courses and events like tonight to, I suppose, support you in your journey as you both decide and think about getting into politics, and then as you move through the journey actually for step to stand and run for election. So I'd like to thank our two participants tonight for joining us, for agreeing to be part of this evening. To Maria Walsh, MEP. Maria, as we all know, is one of our MEPs for the Midlands Northwest region in Ireland. She has a wonderful CV in terms of moving around career-wise from Rosa Tralee through to campaigner, an activist, and then right into the sort of pinnacle of Irish politics at MEP level. She's also a great friend of Women for Election and is always keen to support the work we do. And she gives us loads of mentions in terms of PR and just profile out there to show that she's come through our programme. So we're really, really happy. And thank you so much, Maria, for joining us tonight. And Margaret E. Ward, for taking the microphone for the interview tonight. Margaret is a journalist, an entrepreneur and a broadcaster. She's a co-founder of Women on Air, which looks to see much more women on our airwaves. And also she's a fantastic friend for Women for Election. She does much of our training on communications and leadership and really is a fantastic supporter of the work that we do. And thank you all for joining us this evening. I'm really looking forward to hearing what we have to hear this evening. As you know, our work is something that we've moved to online for the last few months, and it's working really well for us. I hope it's accessible for you to join us and to hear the stories that we have to tell. And maybe just to remind you, we're a voluntary organization in the sense of we're a not-for-profit. We are funded hugely by donations. And if you do like what you see tonight and you'd like to support the work that we do, please, if you would go to our website and donate whatever you can to support the work. So that's it for me, really. I'll hand over to Margaret to take it away. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you so much, Alison. And thank you to Claire for organizing. Maria, it's great to see you. How are you doing?
It's great. You know, I was walking into the Parliament today and I had one of those, you know, those aha moments where we've come full circle. You know, it just seems like yesterday, and realistically in political world, it wasn't that long ago where I was sitting in Dublin at a Women for Election training, scratching my head thinking, is this world for me? And Alison was so kind in her opening words, but I have received more support and just mentorship from you all at Women for Election than I could ever reciprocate in talking about it. But hopefully tonight we'll get some good action and reaction and get some women running.
Absolutely. That's a hope there, ladies. So yeah, pressure. I know, Maria, so you're back in Brussels today, but if you could just give everybody maybe a 1 or 2 minute potted history of your background and kind of what led you.
Yeah,
to
good, good opening, and I love how you've time stamped me 1 to 2 minutes. Clearly, I'm a true politician when I just don't know when to stop this. And I see my two team members, Kira and Emer, on the line, so I'll get messages to say please wrap it up. in a nutshell. You know, I didn't, and I sound like a broken record because this features in a lot of interviews that I do. I didn't grow up in party politics. I grew up understanding the importance of voting, but we never discussed policy legislation. We never even discussed who we're voting for going to vote. But we did grow up in a house that was centrally focused on community activism. And I can say that now, but at the time it was just another thing to do that mom and dad needed help with in the community, you know, like many probably watching, you know, between sweeping the community center, reading at mass, participating, even playing football or soccer in your community, or, you know, for my dad was heavily involved in St. Patrick's Day parade and the Shrew Tidy Towns committees and you name it. And both parents were involved in that. But and my mom was involved in the senior citizens. So like we just grew up in that environment, which then always had me, an aspect of my DNA was volunteerism. So working with youth organizations like the Pioneer Association, which I'm a proud teetotaler, and also No Name Club, which is a youth organization that celebrates young people who just can hang out without the pressures of alcohol and other substances. So I was always dabbling in the PRO aspects or organizing an event or doing what needed to happen. And then fast forward a number of years, I kind of fell into dabbling with maybe nursing and then getting involved in some journalism and then being a runner on TV shows and then finding myself in New York City working in one of the fashion agencies to then working with the famous Swedish photographer to then landing in Philadelphia to work with a fashion label called Anthropology. And I fell in love with that city. And then, yeah, this little thing called the Rosa truly happened in 2014. And for many watching, probably I often joke my life to many started in August 2014, when in actual fact there had been a lot of work prior to that. Yeah, so that's me in a nutshell. And I guess in many ways, and I know we're going to get into it, you know, I just kept trying, erring, and vocations and passions just kept leading me to ask questions of like, why am I here? And why do I keep finding myself at a crossroad to figure out how to make society or my community or my friends' lives a little bit better? And I never cared for the title or the financial success. I cared for community impact. And that's hence the reason kind of why I found myself here and with the good nudge from Women for Election.
So let's just take you to, so you kind of, you finish up your work with Rosa Tralee, you've traveled all over, you've spoken on behalf of Ireland, you've been an ambassador. You know, what are some of the things that you spoke about then during your reign that kind of led to more political thinking?
Yeah, I was, you're the true journalist, so correct me for my poor grammar here, but in a very serendipitous way, I became the Rosa Tralee in the year from 2014 to 2015, the year the country was asked a big question about me and my LGBTQI community members' lives. And while it's an apolitical festival, I certainly, and you know me really well, I certainly take my gray areas and pick holes where I can and nudge where I can't. And I was often asked the question, you know, why should LGBTQI community members have marriage equality? And it's like, well, why don't I deserve to have equality in the country I was raised in and in the community I was educated in? And I think for many watching this, it sparked this overall interest in questions. Now, in hindsight, or looking at that, I was always interested in why people feel referendums were the be-all and end-all of politics. Now, very important societal asks, like what we had in the repeal of the eighth. But yet, when you look at local, national, or European politics, it's like, well, that's for them, that's not for us. And that really sparked the conversation. And dare I say, before that, you know, I'm an Obama baby. And I'm very proud of Obama baby, like Barack Obama's both elections, but that 2006 speech inspired generations. And I was fortunate to be at the front row of that. And I had a family member, a cousin who was deeply ingrained in the Democratic Party and kind of took me under the wing. And I just absorbed all of that audacity of hope and that language that we need to break down the barriers of us and them. So for me, kind of, yeah, it was an avenue. And again, I keep using the word hindsight. You look back when you're old, and not so grimy.
When you're old. Oh yeah, you're ancient.
Not so anymore, and you're thinking like, how did I get here? But in many ways, the serendipitous path led me here. But your question around what I, for Rosa Tralee specific, I worked from organizations with the Hope Foundation in Calcutta in India, and saw firsthand child prostitutes on the street, or mother with 8 children trying to keep food in their in the bellies and trying to survive through prostitution. I also went to South Africa, to the land where Nelson Mandela grew up and lived and died in, and built 2 schools with Niall Mellon Educate. And I often looked for that. It was random community members across Ireland and the UK who came together because they wanted to volunteer, but they physically wanted to leave a mark on the volunteer world. And that happened through Mellon Educate. Went to Belarus and went to what they call an institution. And with the Rosa Tralee, my fellow Rosa and Escort stayed in what can only be described as probably one of the most horrific energy draining buildings I've ever stayed in. And our job is, you know, was to bring in love and hug children who were abandoned because of beliefs by a government. And then you go to the likes of Australia and parts of America and parts of mainland Europe, and then you're talking to Irish expats, immigrants just like I, because my family, I was born in the States and moved to Ireland, but just like I, who had no choice because they, you know, had no choice to leave due to financial issues or hiding their sexuality from family members, and it was safer to go than stay. So it was very diverse.
So your community work, and this is the thing, so many women do volunteer their time working in the community, even if it's just helping their, you know, older neighbor or whatever. So it was kind of that your passion for community that led to you being interested in politics. So then, okay, you went to Women for Election and you were inspired, thankfully, by the Inspire training course, well named, and you decided then that you were going to run for politics. But how did you decide, you know, to run for Europe or to run for county council or to be a TD? And how did you choose your party?
Yeah, for me, and don't forget to include you in that, we had a training with you also in Dublin, not that long after my first training around communications and being confident in who you were. And I always remember thinking, that American girl is just so kick-ass. You know, let's all be like Margaret. I came away from that training program, my first one, and it was a birthday gift to myself. I had just finished supporting the wonderful but super sad conference for honoring Magdalene Laundrie survivors in Dublin, and I came away from that again another experience where I was like, we need to do better. And I over the years have just grown a distaste for armchair activism. And I get it. I was it. Me and my friends would sit around with a cup of tea, or, you know, they might have a glass of wine, and we're talking about the ways of the world and how they need to change this and they need to change that. And then you got to look at yourself one day in the mirror and say, but why the hell am I putting my hand up and getting involved? And I guess all of the experience that I had, the training that I had with Women for Election, just sparked that further want of figuring out where the hell I can leave a mark or just add value somewhere. And it was only in writing down a sheet of paper, and actually Women for Election ran such a brilliant event around like the speed dating exercise, where all political groups were in a room and you got to meet and ask questions to various ones. And it was great because in many ways today's much like the Obama effect, you know, the energy and the welcome is often by the person not necessarily by the political party they sit in. And I think me and you have discussed this plenty of times, like politics is changing to be more personality driven. In many ways, that's great. In other ways, when you look across the pond, either side of us, it's not so great. But you have some amazing personalities and people and change makers within every party. For me, it was simply down to, I had met a number of Fine Gael advocates and their values felt right to me, asking two big questions that ultimately had an impact in my life. And, you know, when I bring it back to my sharing of St. Patrick's Day parade, I think Enda Kenny was my first politician I'd ever met at the age of 7 or 8. And I had a high-vis jacket on and he was a TD at the time. And he was going around saying hello to community members. And you remember those things. They're the seeds that get planted. And I remember Simon Coveney, after I handed over the crown in the Rose of Tralee, just said, would you ever consider politics? And let's just leave the colour from here. I quickly told him, no, not really for my gabby mouth. But again, another seed gets planted. And that's where I think we need to look and change the impact women have. We just need to welcome up and start different conversations.
So you chose one of the main political parties, Fine Gael, right? So what happens? You're okay, I'm going to run for politics. Like, how do you then go, well, how can I have the most impact, or what interests me, or what's available? Do you go and talk to them? Is it a little pull one of them aside and have a little chat? Do you knock on the door of party headquarters and say, hi, I'm here, you know, what can I do?
Like, well, it was a combination of your last ask there of, you know, I had kind of put out the vibe that I was looking and interested in having a conversation, but it was through that speed dating exercise that it was organized by Women for Election. I cannot preach enough about the work that you guys do and just instigating great conversations. And I met another woman called Maria Hegarty, who we had a quick chat, and then I ended up in front of Tom Kern, who was General Secretary at the time. He's recently retired. And the meeting lasted 5 minutes, not even. And I'd asked him about running for local elections, because again, back to that community aspect, I see value and I really wanted to make a mark somewhere, and that for me made sense. And he floated the idea of European elections. And I said, give me a week to think about it. And truthfully, I stepped outside, I stepped on the steps of 51 Mount Upper Street, and I text 10 friends across various of my networks. Because if you have, what I've learned as a young woman, if you have various networks, your questions and your mentorship just becomes richer, because you get really honest feedback from various groups of people, and not just people who think like you. And I think that's most important. And 9 out of 10 of them came back saying, I asked two questions. What does the European Parliament do for you? And who is your local MEP? And 9 out of 10 came back saying they didn't know, to which then kind of instigated this conversation about, well, what does Europe do for us? And they have to be more than just the roads and the buildings that we see, particularly as a West of Ireland woman. But then when I started digging into the history of where we landed and we were at the crossroads, I mean, if we weren't in the European Union back in 73, God only knows where women's rights would be right now. I think we'd obviously be further back, because they lifted the marriage ban and they forced us to lift the marriage ban, which led to many of us being able to go into full-time employment in pre and post marriage and children. And you know, they while we're net contributors now, we have benefited financially and culturally from the impact of them. So in a long-winded way, Max, it just opened up, perhaps much like the Rose of Tralee, a different conversation of difference. How do we really plant the seed that the European Union is one of the greatest aspects to being Irish? We are Irish and we're European, or we're Irish American and we're European. And right now with Brexit, I think we're all the better for it.
And how, okay, so you decide Fine Gael, Europe, you know, what happens now? You go, okay, hey, the party's going to give you loads of money and they're going to arrange all press trips for you. And is that how it happens, or what happens now?
I'm laughing because there's days in the wet Novembers where, you know, I was so fortunate. And I know I say this with understanding, in speaking with women from not just Irish politics, but European politics, that I was afforded a great deal of opportunity and access to rooms that perhaps if I wasn't an international Rosa Tralee a few years prior, it would have been a different currency of exchange. And I mean that not about financial exchanges. I just mean that about understanding or having confidence in what value I can bring to the Fine Gael family and what value I wanted to bring to the constituency, more importantly. But, you know, from I had those conversations in maybe August time, it really started heating up in are we going, are we not, in the September time. But I was already working on lists and calling constituency branches and meeting with, you know, ministers and senators and local councillors across the constituency, but predominantly West and Northwest. So like for anybody who might not know, Midlands Northwest is Galway to Donegal, Mayo, across to Louth, 13 counties, a little bit of a chunky drive. But my focus was always the West and Northwest. Pre-election, I should stress. And it was just showing up to meetings that sometimes there were five people in there, sometimes there was 200 people in there, showing up as the gay Rosa Tralee and trying to convince people that I add value and I want to add value. And starting those internal conversations, which let me tell you, ladies and gents who might be watching, is probably the hardest of conversations. And we've chatted about this, like, what is it that you want to do? And where the hell is it that you want to go? And who do you want to bring with you? Because a couple of three questions that when you're driving at midnight in the middle of nowhere, and you still have a couple more calls to make to try and sell yourself, then that's where you need to dig in. And it's slowly built from there. And of course there was whispers of other Fine Gael members that might want to run. And to which then, you know, I always just stress to Tom Kern to say, like, if others want to run, great, but you need to afford me opportunity to get my feet on the ground so that I can actually put forward my name and my position before decisions get made outside rooms. And that was probably the most frustrating thing over those course of the months and weeks leading up to the actual election and being going through convention and officially becoming a Fine Gael ticket or nominee.
So
conversations could happen or outside of your control. And you were just like, no, I'm here. But within all of that, like you asked, and I don't want to, not answer it. I was fortunate up until becoming the official nominee along with Mairead McGuinness. You know, I had financially put a lot into myself. And then when that happened, then they very much kindly supported me, but not just financially, but just in networking and open up doors and having different conversations.
So one of the things that Women for Election, you know, we talk about the C's, right? And one of the big barriers for women is cash, right? So cash. So yes, they're going to open doors for you, your party, you know, it's a big party. There are going to be a lot of people on the ground. Like, are you expected to have like a big chunk of cash that you're going to put into, you know, buying ads or, you know, like, what do you need? Is there a minimum? Is there like, you need like 25 grand? You need 10 grand? Do you have to do that fundraising yourself? Does the party give it to you?
Well, I was fortunate that the party gave me, once I became a nominee, or if, through convention, the party helped me out. And I had made a decision that money would go towards a campaign bus because I physically and mentally couldn't drive across the constituency and get out and be on show. Plus, I was the new kid on the block. And, you know, I had a running mate in Mairead McGuinness, who this is now her fourth term. She is a legacy now, never mind even tomorrow when she goes through her commissioner hearing as commissioner designate. And then I had opposition members who had previously stood in the mandate. And then on our ticket was 17 names, 17 or 19, I think it was 17. So you have independents, and then you have power weights like Fianna Fáil, Greens, you know, and Social Dems. Like, there was a huge cohort of names and big heavy hitters. So I decided to do campaign bus so I could visibly be there. Plus, I always had this thing where bringing a bit of Europe and who I am to the doorstep, because that's how you connect people. So that for me made sense. And then social media, which I hope we do talk about later on, because there's pros and cons to it. But for me, I had to own a landscape, and I couldn't physically own the landscape of Midlands Northwest because I was a newbie. I couldn't physically or through knowledge base own the political world because I was new, and I was not new just to politics, but I was new to the world of the political speak. And so digitally getting my message out, showing my personality, picking up from aspects of the roads actually helped. Now, when you talk about landscapes, the physical side, I was so fortunate in 2014, 2015. Most communities I had already been to as the Rose. So then I was just reintroducing them as someone with the political hat. And for like many women, we wear a lot of hats, and we need to ensure that people see us wearing those different hats. So I'm not a gay Rose. I'm also a gay Rose who wants to be a kick-ass politician.
So just in terms of selling yourself, right? So some of the top tips for selling yourself. So you've mentioned a few of them there. Basically getting out everywhere, like even if there are only going to be five people there, right? So that's a big thing. Go to every single meeting. You were good about going across the constituency. You talk about the campaign bus, which was also very good for your mental health because you had somebody driving, but it was a mobile. It had your picture, I assume, on the side of it, right? Great. And
friends,
you know,
on the personal front, my friends were like, only you, like, what are you doing? And it parked outside the house. I was always mortified. I was like, oh God, there's a version of my face.
But very clever, right? In terms of like literally a rolling billboard, your use of social media, you know, campaigning digitally. So those are all really good tips. Are there any other tips that you would give people who want to run in terms of selling yourself?
A couple of tips is this, like beyond you and your immediate family and close friends, you actually have a lot more net worth than I think we give ourselves credit for. So perhaps you're a mum, and I don't want to generalize, but perhaps you are. This is a good example. You drop your kids off to school or Montessori. You might say hello to another mum or dad. You say hello to the teacher. You get back in your car, you might stop in the shop. Now, that is like probably 10 people across various networks that have pull or expertise in various different ways. So my what I wish in hindsight I had done, when people talk, and I kept hearing this word, like the term kitchen cabinet. Who's on your kitchen cabinet? What's your kitchen cabinet? I was like, what the feck is a kitchen cabinet? And in hindsight, I actually had a lot of those players. I just didn't know how to A, ask, or B, know where they could add value and how I could add value. And I hope I make sense in that. It's just like, what am I actually asking for? So you might have a friend who's really good at operations, get them on as either a junior or senior, someone in a campaign management mode who you can take direction from and have no problem taking direction or giving direction to, but at the end of the day, you respect and love. And that's probably one of the most important relationships. Another is like accountant. So like you're tracking, be it donations or fundraising or from the party, that you know exactly for audit purposes in SIPO, like what you've spent and where you want to spend. And another big financial factor for me was, and where I probably put a lot of my personal money throughout the campaign, was through feeding volunteers who would come out and meet me, because I hate the fact that, you know, a cup of tea and a sandwich is nothing, but the conversations or knocking on doors is everything. So that for me was really important. And another thing is, and I laugh and I joked about it before we came live, was that photograph. I worked in the creative world. I worked in a world where retouching was great friends. And I say that with great, and I look so different now, but I say that with the sense that for me, it was really important that I controlled the image that went out there. Because a lot of other people in the Rosa Tree and up into the politics, there's a lot of things I didn't know. And a lot of conversations happen in rooms that I couldn't control. And a lot of conversations about me that I couldn't control. And I might be standing beside the person saying them. But what I could control is the image people visually saw of me and that I felt my strongest and my best. Because when I went out to make a speech and might have had my pop-up, or I got off the bus or got on the bus after a really difficult conversation with a constituent, or I got told to off at the door for my beliefs and who I was, I could see that woman in the picture where I had a hair and makeup done professionally, and I had a stylist called Sarah Ricard just choose some clothes for me, and a beautiful photographer called Alex Hutchison snap me for 2 hours one day in Dublin, then I knew, you know what, I can be that boss. And I know it sounds perhaps to some egotistical, to others a little bit of a waste of a journey or a story, but for me, that's who I wanted to put out, and that's the essence I wanted to be. So in the moments where I question myself, someone who once looked like me with a bit of makeup on was standing right back, you know, just egging me on.
And then you'd see that photograph and it'd be like, on the boss. It'd be like, okay, I can do this. You've got this.
Right. And we talked about this before, even difficult when I didn't understand what was going on here in the parliament, or I might come out of a meeting, I physically have to step into your power. Like, you've got this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's probably another add on or something I can only encourage more people, women in particular, to do. You know, we need to break down the barriers of conversation, of honest conversation. Last night, Fine Gael Women's Network is really kicking off, and it's been led by a woman who was unsuccessful in the local council, Becky Loftus from Midlands. And she felt she was so passionate about her community and the spirit of women involved in politics that she didn't want to let it go. So she's been instigating this amazing women's network within the Fine Gael family, and bringing in all these key stakeholders who are having, for the first time, I think, honest conversations about what politics looked like. You know, hours, constituency branches, the impact of COVID, regardless of whether it's on Zoom or not, childcare, our mental health, which I'm a big advocate for, and we don't talk enough about, and the harsh realities of politics, and that it wears on you. But if you have those type of conversations every couple of days, you understand that you're not the only one. And I think that will begin to start opening up conversation. Like, if she can do it, she can do it, even on the worst days, hell, I can do it.
So one of the big things, of course, is your network, your kitchen cabinet, right? So you have your campaign, you had certain people, you created your kitchen cabinet or didn't, but you would suggest that people do that. But how did you decide what issues to run on? Like, there's so many issues, you know, was it based on what you heard from people, your own personal passions or your values?
Well, it certainly developed more and more, and I'm an emotive person, and if any of my family members are watching, they're probably laughing as I say that, but for me, I love story, I love engaging, and you can't engage with people, and I don't want to become the politician that just rhymes out stats, because that's what white men in suits do, and people I meet in the door are too good for that. So for me, it's about going around and meeting as many people, and then slowly but surely my specifics or my core issues started developing even further because I met more and more people.
And what were they?
One big one was mental health. One big one had to be that, because for me, unfortunately, in a small community that maybe 10 miles from my house, we've lost over 20 men and women through death by suicide. And I still can't fathom how we don't have that right yet, so that people don't feel they're adding value. And that's a fight I think we're going to, particularly now, we're going to be doing for many years to come. But certainly there's elements that we can make a lot easier on national level and at European level. Now I get to Europe and they tell me mental health is not a competency of the European Union. So we've a little bit more work to do to make sure that gets over the line by the next election. Another one was climate, and the fact that we need to shut up and listen to key specialists, people who know what they're talking about, and young people. And I mean, when young people, I mean the energy of them, the fact that they don't see obstacles in their way. and the fact that they see a problem and they might not have a clear solution, but they can tell you where the hell to find the clear solution. And I love that. And I really tried to do that throughout my campaign. So the climate was another. And then as a woman who grew up in rural Ireland, had a father and a mother who ran their own businesses, entrepreneurial livelihoods. You know, the word entrepreneur just wasn't really discussed in our house. I think it became a buzzword really in the last few years, where my dad ran a construction company. My mom, on paper, is a housewife, but she was the accountant. She was the fixer-upper, the psychologist, the mathematician when things needed to work out. And then, you know, they went into real estate after that, and she works in the office. So the two of them are just fighting their own battles in terms of keeping their head above water, like as any SME or new business is across the constituency of Midlands Northwest. And we grew up on a farm. My dad's a part-time farmer. So another issue was, you know, SMEs and the impact of our custodians of the land and water.
So SMEs and also agriculture.
Yeah. And they go hand in hand. You know, in agriculture, a farmer is a business. You know, stock goes up, stock goes down, markets go up, markets go down. You know, newspapers get read and heads get scratched, and you go out the door and you talk to your animals and you're still trying to figure out how to make a bit of cash off them. And for me, I grew up in that environment and I loved it. So much so that I started my green cert last September. So that's a course to just educate. That's my day off. One Friday a month, I get a little bit more experience in agriculture. But I think it's such a beautiful, unfortunately for many, it has to be a part-time job for the rest of Ireland. So, you know, there were the type of focus points I had. And then when the overarch really was mental health, like how, regardless of where you are and what you're doing, we need to make sure citizens' mental health is up.
So you won, as we know, you won. So there's, I know,
in Midlands Northwest, you're stuck with me until 2020.
So you won. So what was it like though on that first day? Like, first of all, you must have been exhausted because campaigning is long hours and very intense and very emotional. So I'm sure it was very, very high. And then were you just wrecked afterwards? And then what was your first day like?
That's really funny. Even throughout the count, because bear in mind, I had never been to a count centre ever. So I went into the TF in Castlebar in County Mayo, and they started local counts first. Obviously, in ours weren't going to be counted till the Monday, so people voted on the Friday. And I remember, and I think I've told you this before, I remember closing the door, and we had one last sweep in Sligo and made our way down. And I remember closing the door on Thursday night, and it was late. And I thought to myself, "There's nothing else you could have done." Sure, certain conversations and decisions could have been different, but you yourself, you couldn't have put any more energy into it. So over the course of the count, I was like, if this doesn't work out, we've gotten one hell of a job. Like we've changed the odds, and I would hope in the long run, we would have maybe sparked some conversation for another to run who didn't grow up in practical politics like I did. And then slowly but surely, as the count started getting a little bit more in our favor, you know, I'm the forever Irish person. I was like, listen, I won't make a comment until over the line. And I remember someone from News Talk coming over to me and saying, Maria, like, you're 5 seconds away from being it. I won't, just in case. and then literally it happened. I got told to go up and make a speech. MEP Flanagan and MEP at the time, McCarthy, also made speeches. And I remember coming down going, right, we're on. Within, I think, 36 hours, I was in Brussels on an early flight. So I left my house at 2 a.m. in the morning to get that early flight into Brussels, which pre-COVID I was doing. That's a part of my job. I do that every Monday morning. And I say this to everybody who's thinking about it, as you're edging closer to becoming the second seat, as I did, or winning that seat, conversations are like, well, what committees do you want to go on? Where do you want to see yourself? What's your team looking like? And then you're in the yin yang situation of like, well, I haven't got my seat. And where do I start having these conversations? And not just with outside people, but with myself, because now it happened. And now the responsibility is I got to go do what I've just promised everybody I was going to do. And that's a whole other.
Were you in shock? Were you kind of in shock? Were you kind of like, has this really just happened? Where do I go from here?
I think I went into fight, like many, I think I went into flight or fight mode. And probably at various points over the account center, I was both, half my body was like, get out of here. And the other half is like, no, let's take this on. But the conversations around the logistics and operations of being an MEP started making me become more aware that, okay, this is serious now. And this, as someone who, probably wouldn't be great with commitment, now had a 5-year plan. Someone who really struggles with, well, who I am and where I'm going, and taking on startup roles or working with different organizations for various years of my professional life. And I'd started working when I was 12. Now I had a plan for 5 years. And that brings on a whole other level of conversation within yourself. But I got out here, I got out to Brussels, and you go through like the sexiness of it is you go through orientation, you go through it quick because you need to get to different group meetings to then start committee meetings. And then you need to, have difficult conversations with more senior members in your delegation of like why you want certain committees, and then you don't get them, and then you have to start making negotiations. And I'm doing that as a newbie with no senior advisor around me other than, I had a great friend who came with me who was a part of the party, Brian Dawson. But like there's certain conversations, people need to look at you and say, you need to find your own voice there. And sometimes when you, perhaps maybe the subconscious level knew, well, maybe it won't happen, so I won't go dig deep into that conversation within myself. And then you find yourself sitting in the moment of now, and you need to step up and start fighting for your corner.
And how about, so we need to talk about kind of the highs and lows, say, of being a woman in politics. And we're definitely going to have to talk about social media and sexual harassment and denigration of women in politics, because it's a reality. But there are also lots of positives. So can we talk about the positives and negatives of being a woman in politics?
Well, first and foremost, positives are, I think when you look left and right of us, into the UK, into the US right now, being an Irish woman, being able to put her hand up and get involved and within a very short period of time become a parliamentarian is something that is of great honour and a really pinch me moment every time I come into the parliament. And you're one of the hundreds of MEPs representing your small island, The other positive is there is a lot of people like you. You just have to navigate towards your uncertainties for maybe a month or two. And then people start popping up within your party and across party of great friends who will come up to you and say, I like the amendment you put in, but my party is going to have a red line on that. So can we find a negotiation? And that is what this house is. It is compromise and negotiation, which then leads me on to one of the negatives, which is, and I hate to bring it up again, but Brexit. Like I sat in the chamber in Strasbourg, and I listened to our first president commissioner, Sylvain Delaney, make her speech. And in her opening words, she talked about equality. She talked about women. She talked about her being a mother of seven. And that's just one of her hats. And also in the chamber was a bunch of hooligans, if you don't mind me saying, not adhering to any sort of statesman-like attitude, chanting and bickering. And that, unfortunately, was the Brexiteers. And you're sitting in this house that you've worked your tail end off, and not just you, but your party and your family, and you've made personal sacrifices. And this is a democratic house. And you're thinking, in 2019 and 2020, how are we here? And then fast forward and what we see now with their own dealings of the internal market bill. And right now, what I know today, it might look, there might be a sue job en route. But I remember the day they left, and we had a voting session here in Brussels in the parliament. And there was cheers and champagne you know, flowing everywhere. And you're thinking millions of citizens are losing out because of egotistical values and nationalism and an us and them divide. And that's what we see going on in the United States too. So it's a yin and a yang. You see so many positives, you see so many negatives. And then that leads me to the next negative, which hopefully I'm working towards making a positive, is that disconnect with the European Union. Like, how do I sit in front of a classroom, be it in primary, secondary, or third level, or a community group of any age, and tell them, we are so much better because we're in the European Union, and here's why. And not just because of funding. Funding is great. Yes, it keeps lights on and roads good and buildings up, but it's also a culture. It's our students who are going into Erasmus programs. I'm working on a file on vocational training to really open up and destigmatize the fact that apprenticeships and traineeships and vocational training are leading you to a better career. And that, not just for Ireland, but that link would bring us right across the European Union because we're in it. So there's so many positives, there's so many negatives. I think I told you before, most Mondays I walk into the Parliament and I'm like, yes, this is going to be a great week. And 3 days later, I'm coming out going, I don't know if I got kicked or slapped, but something happened. And then finally, and I know, and I'm glad we're going to talk about it, the online abuse. And for women watching, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's difficult. Over the campaign, I had a social media guy and a gal who hit a lot. I also had close friends who would screen grab saying, did you see this about yourself? It's hilarious. So they probably didn't help my mental health, but they certainly tried to Irish it up. But it only amplified when I got in, and 144 characters of a tweet certainly don't do what you're trying to do justice. But that is unfortunately the world we're living in. Equally, it allowed me to get the seat because I was able to use social media and get my message out. I just have to do a better job consistently as a woman, as a young woman, a part of a political party, a part of a broad church here in Europe, to make sure that my authentic self is constantly connecting through social media, because otherwise we end up with what we have now within the European Union, a disconnect.
And how do you deal with it? I mean, so first of all, what social media platforms are you on? I know you're on Twitter, but what else are you on?
Yeah, I'm a lover of Instagram. I'm a lover of Insta, good old Insta. Twitter, I appreciate it, I respect it, but I always have to remind myself, because that's where a lot of, you could go down a rabbit hole of negativity on Twitter real fast. And I have to always remind myself and my team that a very small percentage, probably about 10% of our community, lives on that. But it is the place for, you know, quick comments. Journalists and media often contact you there. So it's a place you need to be. And then you have Facebook, which I was told early last week that it is now for the plus 55s, they get their news sources from Facebook and Google, and predominantly Facebook, and that's only rising. And video content, I think by next year will be up by 78%, and that's how we're taking in information. So it's important that I'm across all three. I haven't fallen trapped to the TikTok yet, and if you've seen my dad's
watch movie, out, do you know how to dance? Well, I don't know how to dance. I don't know, you should be on TikTok.
It always helps when people are drinking and they look at my dance moves, because I look a little bit more like Shakira than I do.
And what about LinkedIn? I know that you speak a lot about SMEs. Do you use LinkedIn at all?
I do. Not as much as I should do. Now, they actually just, this is one of another positive of the Parliament. Like, we have at our fingertips LinkedIn in-house training, which is great for our team and myself. So particularly over COVID, we could tap into these upskilling spaces that perhaps as an SME or an entrepreneur wouldn't have that benefit. But for me, it's always important, so that when I do speak to groups, I'm like, well, I learned this on LinkedIn and I learned that on LinkedIn, and you should check it out if it's for you. We also have a research unit too, so that if questions from constituents come in, or a business, predominantly a female business, come in about what other female businesses are doing across Europe, we have a resource to do that. So LinkedIn for definite would be one. I just need to activate a little bit more.
And we've spoken previously about some incidents that have happened on social media, and you told me a good one not too long ago. I don't know if you want to share that, but you kind of, you called somebody out on it, which is good.
I called someone out on
somebody. Somebody said something about you on Twitter. They work for a organization, a publication, so they're a public figure themselves.
This is where I need to become. I need to channel Margaret, because you're so politically correct. So I made a commitment to myself that online abuse, unfortunately, since being elected, has become very personal and often very sexual, and not about actually what I would have done for my work. And so I made a point, and I'm quite sensitive to around the mental health space. You know, for me, if you're ridiculing me putting ads out about mental health to a constituent, particularly over COVID, then we're going to have a conversation. Because A, either you're going to tell me how to do it better, or we're going to have a conversation why you feel that ad didn't belong there in the first place. So there was two incidents. One with an elected representative who I called, and I had a conversation about, you know, you're an elected official. I wouldn't do that an elected official unless I had grounds to do it, or I've given them the heads up that, listen, I don't agree with you and here's what I'm doing. And the other was with a journalist and worked for an organization, had listed on Twitter she worked for an organization, but yet had no problem ridiculing me around work, but in a very personal attack-based way. So I'd made a commitment with myself and my team that if there are people that I can contact and they hold me to high regard because I'm an elected official, then I hold them in high regard because they're an elected official or they work for an organization in the media. And if, particularly in the media, if you're not even going to call for a comment, and if I don't comment back, then that's on me. But if you don't even call me for a comment, then we're actually doing a disservice to the world of news and true news. And just earlier this week, I learned another horrifying statistic through Social Dilemma, that documentary on Netflix I just watched. That fake news spreads 6 times more faster on Twitter than real news. So if you're a part of an organization or elected official and you're adding to fake news, then we need to have a conversation.
And so you did. You rang her up and you called her out on it.
I did. I'm still waiting for the reply. But
I say she was shaken when she got that phone call. But anyway, I mean, I think that's I think that is what you have to do. You have to call it out.
And I say this to anybody who might be an official on here or work within an organization. You know, just call someone for a comment. And if they're not available, or if you feel I have done something out of turn and been personal to you on social media or in the press, then call me out of it. Because unless we really point the finger and actually have an honest conversation about what's real and what's not, we get lost in the abyss. But more importantly, our citizens get lost. And that's what we collectively need to work on figuring out and fixing.
And I think tomorrow you're involved in a chat, aren't you, about what the European Parliament is actually doing about the sexual harassment of women online, aren't you?
Yeah, tomorrow afternoon, National Women's Council of Ireland are having a great event. Lord Mayor Hazel Chew is on it, and I haven't seen her. She's another big fan, and I know had come through an alumni of Women for Election. I actually think we were in the same room in that training too, even though she's far more competent than I.
You're both amazing.
But look at that in terms of, I get quite a lot of online abuse through because of my sexuality or the fact that I'm a Rosa Tlaib or the fact that I'm a part of a political party, both here in Brussels as well as in Ireland. And Hazel received horrific online abuse for no other reason other than racism. So check it out tomorrow afternoon. I should have all the specifics, but come back to me 2 seconds and I'll have all the information in front of me.
Now, okay, so final tips. What are your top tips for somebody who's watching this, who's thinking about it, but they don't really know? I don't know, you know, is it worth the hassle? Or can I really make a difference? Can I actually have any impact if I run? What advice would you give them?
I would give the only advice I can give is if we do not see various community members in
the political and on the political landscape, then we end up with, unfortunately, what we have now. And, you know, in light of the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and women like her who broke glass ceilings, and I don't mean in a romantic way, like walking into rooms only gets easier when there's more women or diverse community members in them. And unfortunately, we are now at the crossroads where if we don't, it falls back. We see it across Europe right now in the likes of Hungary and Poland, reneging on LGBTQI rights or women's rights. And equality is not a gift. It is to many white privileged men predominantly and women now in a country like ours, but a hell of a lot of people, and what I said in my opening words, had to leave Ireland for a better life of welcome because they weren't welcomed in their home and their community that they grew up in. And we can quickly go back to that if we don't step up and get into rooms. And it's a scary thing, I'm not going to lie, but you know what? Your feet are on the ground, build that network around you, put your hand up and know that collectively around the conversation table, much like my dinner table, when I talked about growing up, the conversation gets richer and you get specific on key issues like making societal change, like childcare, like healthcare, like mental health. And we won't get there at the rate we're going, if we don't get more people involved. And of course, continue to go and watch Women for Election because I'm a very proud alumni of them. And I'm all about the Yeah Yeah Sisterhood, and my office door and online or any social media fields are always open to people who might have a question. And no question is large or small. If you can have an honest conversation with someone, then that makes it all the richer. And we need to talk to our young men and women about getting involved in politics too.
Absolutely, as early as possible. That's one thing you said to me you wish you had done differently.
I wish I just found my voice within the political space sooner, or perhaps, you know, better yet, I wish I had a national school or the Blue Schools program was out when I was growing up. And Blue Schools program are great if anybody is interested in or a teacher or a parent, and they go into national school, predominantly working with fifth and sixth class, and talk about the values of the European Union, talking about what democracy looks like and unity, and the fact that our classrooms for the better of our country are getting richer with cultures and ethnicities and creeds and orientations. That's a great avenue to really have a safe conversation with where we're going in the world. And I think, you know, I was inspired by Obama. I just wish we had more Obamas right now.
Maybe you're our next Obama.
Oh, well, that's a big shoe to
put it up to you there, you know.
I wouldn't mind at some point, you know, I have Michelle Obama up and probably above himself, Barack Obama. But yeah, and I mean, if everything, if we had more cheerleaders like you, Mags, and Alison, I think we'd be in a much richer place too, because we'd have more women just coming, understanding that their value and their voice is deserving of being heard. And finally, if you are an American citizen, vote. If you're a citizen at all, vote. But right now, with November looming, just please vote.
Well, the big, I have a big sweatshirt here somewhere and it says nasty women vote. So be a nasty woman. Get out there and vote. Alison, I know you're going to finish up here now in a minute, but Maria, thank you so much. As always, a real pleasure. And thank you to everybody for listening. And I hope you felt inspired and motivated to get out there and run yourselves or to support other women to run. We really need more women everywhere, all the time, every day, 24/7, just more women.
Just as you say that, and I apologize, Alison, like I had enough time to get stuff in, but I just want to stress, when I got elected and I walked into the parliament, it was only by another MEP who has since moved on to the Leinster House, Marion Harkin, who'd introduced me to two women. Both women now work for me. Outside of that, I did not receive another female applicant to be and work in my team. Now, I hope that doesn't say anything about who I am, but I think it says more about women not putting themselves forward. And you need to see value in who you are and ask for everything that you deserve. And if you do not ask, we'll never receive. So if you see a candidate running that even in 2024, be it local, national, European elections, just get in touch now, because they're always looking for that person or those people that will be ready to hire when they take office. So big shout out to a woman who helped me find my two out of my 14. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Maria, and thank you, Margaret, for a really inspiring hour on a Thursday. I think, you know, many of us listening to that, it's just another shot in the arm to encourage us to go back out and do something, and really the honesty and opening and the energy that I think you've shown us tonight, Maria, is you know, just going to make us get off our asses and get out there and start doing something. So thank you so much. Women for Election is, you know, we're here because of women like Margaret and Maria who support our work and tell the story to other women and encourage you to get on the ticket, to become a campaign manager, to do whatever you can to get involved in the whole process. So thank you for being with us, all of the audience tonight. Thank you to Claire for organizing the event. Claire is our absolute expert on training, and she really manages to put it together pretty much every week. We have an event at this stage. So thank you all for joining us, and hopefully see you at the next one.
Thank you for joining us for our very inspiring conversation with Maria Walsh and Margaret Ward. You can subscribe to the podcast, where you'll find many more thought-provoking conversations with some of the most prominent women in Irish politics. Like what we do, why not join us in our movement to get more women in Irish politics? Check out our website, womenforelection.ie.